Greatest Shop of Maniacs. You are listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front end web design and development. I'm Dave at home with the kids, Rupert, and there's a trash man outside. And with me is Chris. New office, new booth, old booth choir. Hey, Chris. Chris.
Doing just fine. All that office crap is behind me now. We are 100% out and into the new place and all that. Having fun.
You know, we're recording this a smidge ahead, but if all goes well, there should be a pit of concrete in my backyard by now. So that's very exciting to have a pit of concrete. So looking forward to that.
I agree. Upon which a shed will be built, which will be Dave's work reservoir or whatever, oasis.
Paravel Far West.
Yeah.
So there we go.
There we go. All y'all are moving, I hear. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Except Reagan added on. So that was probably a smart move. So there you go. So.
More value. Well, we've been talking. Let's do some questions and then we'll get into some stuff a little bit.
Just because we do have a bit of a special announcement that we're building up to. So it's probably in the show title, but it's a bit of a special announcement.
Not a banana, not a pear, but an... The Marcus Kober writes in, he's been a WordPress developer for a long time, made 160 WordPress themes for customers. So yeah, I'd say knows what he's doing in there. Mm-hmm. I built sort of a framework for myself. This is Marcus talking. All works fine, but what I'm messing around with now is asset bundling. So I've used Gulp. We know Gulp, right? Gulp's a task runner. Mm-hmm. You write some Node mm-hmm. JavaScript. It does some jobs. Then Marcus switched to Webpack. Okay. I just with the Webpack, then moved to Parcel and then eventually switched back to Gulp. So what a funny little tricky thing there. So he's bundling assets for it's just like generic
circle
themes.
Of life.
Yeah. It does feel circle of lifey, doesn't it? The biggest problem for me is that I need various entry points. So that's kind of interesting, right? Like what do you think of as an entry point in this bundling? You're like, Parcel makes it real clear. Parcel was kind of big on the entry point thing because they're like, point you at your index.html file. That'll be your entry point. And then it spiders out from there, meaning it's going to find your CSS and your JavaScript and everything. It kind of makes sense as an entry point file. Whereas Webpack, we're much more used to pointing it at like an index.js file as kind of the entry point, and multiple entry points were less of a thing, although I don't know if that's changed or whatever. I know Webpack 5 is out now and all that. Whereas Gulp doesn't, you just configure it however you want. It doesn't really have the concept of an entry point. It's just like, do this job.
Gulp's very much like, go grab every CSS file or SAS file and just do it. Like,
yeah, because then it's globbing, right? You'd say. Okay, so I need various entry points, the CSS on the homepage, the CSS used, for example, by advanced custom fields, and just do, he just is a little opinionated about how he wants things bundled, which so am I. The reason I switched from Webpack back to Gulp, the detour to Parcel, was because of the multiple entry points thing, is how tedious adding new entry points when creating, for example, a new ACF block was, except the fact that I was pretty happy with Webpack because it automated so much. Now that, now I have to manually do that in my Gulp file. So he's like making a new block, which I don't know how many of you have done this, but it's pretty cool. I think ACF blocks are remarkably cool in WordPress. They did a good job with those. But you can see how an ACF block has a job. Well, it may actually not have a JavaScript file, whatever, but it definitely will have some CSS because otherwise, what are you doing, really?
it's my own Gutenberg block that spits out a text paragraph. Yeah it's cool.
Honestly, yeah. I do have one that I don't think has any CSS because it was, I scaffolded out my own detail summary block because I didn't at the time, I don't know if this has changed in Gutenberg now, but at the time it didn't have one. But what you want in a detail summary block is a summary element, but then absolutely arbitrary everything else. And I know you've talked about this before. It's a little dangerous to put lots of stuff in a details element because all the semantics of it gets totally wiped. But you might want to list in summary. There.
Yeah.
Just anything in the details. The summary is the thing that you like click on to toggle it, and then everything else inside there. Like if you put a header in there, not going to be a header. Wah, wah.
Yeah. I mean, or it's like hidden by default or whatever.
Or is it the summary that gets wiped out?
The summary gets wiped out because that's a button. It has a roll type button.
Yeah.
Some browsers have roll.
So
summary,
don't make that. You can put like an H3 in there if you want, but that won't read as a header. But what if you put an H3 in just the details? Is that cool somehow?
It will still like be in the document outline, you know, but it's basically if it's hidden, it's hidden, you know, like it's
yeah.
Right. I
so
don't
the fact
know
that you have a header that's or hidden or not is maybe not like the best idea anyway.
Yeah, it's a disclosure. It's like optional content, basically, you know,
optional content. Okay. So Marcus here is back on Gulp. And here, it took some time to get to my question, finally. what would you say is the state-of-the-art technique when it comes to asset bundling management, when it comes to like WordPress and something that you're going to need multiple entry points and output files for? Yeah, right. You're not going to get an answer to that, I don't think.
I think you have a good tool in Gulp. You have a good friend and you know it works. I mean, we had Gulpers on the show, you know, it's not dead. It's not a dead project. It's still going. There's a community, Blaine. You know. Yeah, Blaine. I was just had his last name, and so I was just like, wait a minute, that's not his first name. but yeah, so we like it's a thriving project, so I wouldn't even worry about it. But it does like. Sort of have this, you know, when the web has moved on to Webpack 9000 and you're like, dude, Gulp works for me, you feel like antiquated or whatever. But that's not necessarily the case. If it's working for you and it's working real good, then use it. Like,
yeah,
that's awesome. You know,
I use Gulp on my WordPress projects for the most part. I think do we have a Gulp thing on Shop Talk? Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah. And then like, what is Gatsby? It's just a really fancy Webpack config. You know, like, I don't think that's said enough. You know what I mean? So maybe you have a whole startup there. But 16 million in funding. But there's, yeah, I think it's fine. You know, if you want like new hotness, develop it. Jason Miller.
No, does Jason Miller have a new fancy bundler?
It's called WMR, which is, I think, warm module reloading is the portmanteau there. But it's popular in the Twitters, like literally this week. I got DMs about it. They'll probably be talking about it at Chrome Summit too. But I think it's kind of more optimized for like the React workflow. Like it's kind of this single entry point sort of thing. You know, again, it might kind of maybe doesn't work, you know, it's not, maybe not, that's like the new hotness, but you know,
you need something to process SaaS and stuff, right? So I don't know that is that thing going to do that, or does it run tasks?
It is a ESM build server on the, like locally, so kind of like it's kind of more for like all in JS things in my opinion, but because it has a server and like it just in like this these like I think it's called the ES6 server, let me make sure, or ESM server. I'm very
so
close,
it'll spin up a local host exactly. thing for you,
yeah, that has like that'll do like node like imports, like, or vanilla JavaScript imports, you know, imports. Yeah. And it, but it will also like, it also has a build feature. So like you can run it through a build. And so then it'll do the proper bundling with all the sharding and stuff like that.
Cause I think of Snowpack here too, whereas Snowpack has like, we'll do your SaaS and stuff too, but it's mostly for like, npm, you know, like pull some crap off npm. And then what it did was it was like, I'm not gonna, I wish I could talk about it more intelligent, we got to get Frank on the show or whatever, there's somebody from that team to talk about it. But this is like, it doesn't recompile it over and over and over. It just does it once and then it's like ready to go. So it's like warm. So it reminds me of the stuff that you're talking about with Jason Miller's thing. But, you know, I think Snowpack is a big player here, too. I don't know that it's right for a WordPress thing. It does seem more like an all-in on JavaScript kind of thing. It's got its own special config and stuff. In fact, I just happened to look to see that it could do SAS just now, and apparently it can. Any bundler has to do SAS. That's like the rule.
Yeah. Like, and it can do that, but it's always like, you know, just like use our server and we'll solve the problem. It's like, well, I'm on MAMP with WordPress. What do I do there? Like, I just run a web server. Then you like recompile my WordPress theme, my PHP includes, and
everybody wants to be your server, scripts. Don't they?
Everyone wants to be my server, and I have one. It's called LAMP. I love LAMP, and so why do I? You know, so like everyone's, you know. Rich Harris from Svelte was kind of like the compiler is kind of the future of JavaScript or something like, or, and I think Swix sort of said this too, but like it's all the like innovation can, cause we can do a lot at the build process in the compiler, you know? So there's a lot of innovation that can happen right there. But I think as a result, everyone wants to be your build tool and everyone wants to be your server. And so I just don't know. You know, what if I have build tools and servers?
Even with Gulp, I usually have it spin up browser sync or something so that there's some kind of server there. That way I can tie the tasks together. Like if SAS gets processed, then do hot reloading. Because I kind of like mm-hmm. having those two pieces of code sitting next to each other. They don't always have to be, though. I noticed in Local by Flywheel, which is another way to spin up a WordPress site, of course, it wants to be your server too. In fact, it kind of has to be. Because they're these little mm-hmm. Docker container things, right? So then if you want to use this Gulp setup too in your browser sync, you're telling these two servers to talk to each other. In browser sync, you have to put a line of code in there. It's like, well, actually then proxy it to this other server location. So you kind of have two local hosts that are up. You have local that's running at like port 3000 or something, and then some other browser sync thing that's running at port 12,000 or something. It's just the mm-hmm. kind of the nature of the beast. It's oftentimes you have to have these servers kind of proxy to each other because they all have different jobs.
Yeah.
Now here's another way to throw at this for you, just because we're talking about all these things. Remember CodeKit? Not like it doesn't exist anymore. I'm just being like, we don't talk about it that much. It's a Mac app. You know, we didn't use it like Dave and I on Chop Talk I used to because Dave went Windows. We'll talk about that in a minute. But so, and it's a Mac only app, but it does work across teams because it has a config file that can go in your repo. But CodeKit is this Mac app that you just like drop a folder on and it watches to do the type of stuff you might want to do. It'll run all your JavaScript through Babel and stuff. It'll run all your SAS through it. And then if you like have a new folder that happens to be an ACF block or whatever, it'll just know what to do. It'll just be like, oh, I see a new .scss file there. I'm just going to process it for you. I don't think that's to be discounted. I think that might work really nice, especially if you're A, alone, or B, on a team where you know you can buy CodeKit for everybody and you kind of control their working environment a little bit. It does assume CodeKit, though. It's like one person can use Gulp and the other person can use CodeKit. It is kind of an all-in thing in that way. But it does stay in sync between people, which I think is cool.
If you needed the like deployment server to compile the SAS, you know, because you're getting the SAS collisions or whatever, like, you know, that's a thing. Like,
and it runs a server. So you could potentially have like three servers running. It's just
silly. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm all for invention, and there's kind of cool like module based like JS packers and servers kind of coming out, which is cool. Veet from Evan Yu on the Vue team is pretty cool. I've experimented with that. It's basically like that ESM server for Vue, and then you can like you just put React in it, and there's hot module reloading and all the fancy features mm-hmm. people want. So
the next gen of this is cool. Like I don't. I just happened to, I don't want to crap on Webpack because I think it was a big deal and I think tons of projects use it, literally use it at CodePen, and it works for us. Like, it's not like this evil thing in the world, but it's like, I feel like the next gen is not Webpack. I've just fought with it way too many times in my life and been really like bummed out about not being able to do the work that I wanted to do because Webpack, that I'm starting to be like not hot on it. I don't like it. And every time I play with the next gen thing, I'm like, this is fast and smooth and easy and understandable. And I like it.
Yeah. I read somewhere, it was some blog post. I wish I could quote it. I was trying to do a quick search through my Twitters, but there's a, like somebody was saying, like the next generation of tools, wouldn't it be cool if they were had a broader audience than developers, right? Because right now all the tools are like, oh, you know, command line this and blah 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 and do this, you know, like what if the next set of tools like had other personas involved, like the content author or the you know, the I don't know, the whatever, the person who just has to click a button once a week to update whatever the stat chart on the website or something, you know, like what is that generation of tools and can we get there? Is that possible? So I don't know. Can we have GUIs for tools, you know, to make it easier to deal with? Cause you know, the problem with Webpack, it's a workhorse. It works really good, but then you like open up the thing and you're like, good Lord, what's happening? Like there's all these transforms and doodads and things I don't get. So the mental overhead of opening a complex Webpack config is tough. So how do we ease that?
Even when you're like super fresh and you look at it and you're like, I'm ready to deal with this today. I can figure this out. Like, oh, I see it's looks for these type of files that, you know, it, I don't know. It's like, it's not that you look at the config when you're like in the mood to do it and it's not like incomprehensible. It's kind of fine. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, then you get into edge casey weirdness. And like we kept talking about ES modules, right? What we're talking about there is like import statements, but like valid ones. And what I mean by valid is like the statement import React from React is not valid JavaScript. That's not a thing. That it just, that's assuming some kind of bundler knows that, oh, I see. I'm going to actually go look in a folder that is arbitrarily called node_modules and see if I can find it in there for you. And there's special code written to do that.
Yeah.
Tried to run that in regular JavaScript, it would just fail. It will just be like, there, it's a syntax error. That's not real JavaScript. So the alternative there is
where that is.
Yeah, that's not a file path. It's not, doesn't end in JS. What am I even looking for here, you know? Whereas ES modules is like, well, use regular ES module syntax, like link to an actual file somewhere or a URL or something that has something at the other end of it, which is fine. The syntax really isn't that different and is quite flexible and can do some cool things. That's like valid JavaScript. And I like it when bundlers are based on that and support that kind of syntax. What I struggled with it recently was you can't get Webpack to just leave those ES module imports alone. Just be like, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's valid JavaScript right there. Don't touch it. Just let it be. Not happening.
Well, isn't it funny? It's funny that the like import foo from httpunpackage.com whatever is like more JavaScript than like import foo from whatever cool node module, you know, like it's just kind of funny. Like that actually is more correct. I don't know. The like hot linking to an actual source file. What are we doing? This.
And I get why people don't want to write ./ node modules and then like deep link into a folder or something. But I don't know. Maybe we do want to though, because it's at least it's reality. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I wonder. There's like just a smidge of magic, right? Like in that I don't think people understand or even realize magic is happening. You know, you just input foo from bar or foo from foo is like that's node magic or something, or like node.js was is literally they require magic, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah.
And we've talked about that. Not only that, but not all JavaScript is like ready for ES modules anyways.
I mean, have you ever been like where you're like import foo from whatever? And then it's just like, dude, no. I don't know. I can't do it. You know? And you're just like, require foo, like const foo equals require foo. And it's like, yeah, dude, okay, that's great.
Yeah.
I get that. You're just like, I'm sorry. Like, what did we do wrong? I'm sure there's like some kind of logical, like some export was configured or something like that.
But yeah, I just, right. I'm some like, other project that uses Webpack put common.js instead of ESM. And okay. Marcus, good luck. Try Gulp, I guess, or keep on Gulp.
Look Stick at Webpack. With Gulp. I don't think there's a multi-entry endpoint thing that's better or even on the horizon. You know what I mean? I can't think.
Not of, really, like, but I think my CodePen point has merit only because now you make a new block, you have to remember to go into your Gulp file and like teach it where that new thing is. Maybe there may be a way you could write like a file glob thing that watches broadly enough to catch those new files too. You probably can. But it sounds like that was your pain point before was, oh, now I make a new SCSS file. Now I have to teach my Gulp how I want that process to. I could see that being annoying enough that you want off. But maybe just look at configuring it in a more broad way. Maybe it will be your friend. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by AWS Amplify. Amplify had a huge release at the beginning of December this year. It's called their admin UI. So Amplify is already this kind of like Jamstack based thing, right? Like there's static hosting. And so it's the same thing that we expect that you like push to master and your static site goes live and stuff. But AWS Amplify, it's been a CLI or it has a CLI and it of course always will, that helps you scaffold out stuff for your site. Like, okay, I'm building a site. I need some storage for it. Well, AWS has great storage stuff. I'm going to need to like upload user avatars. Okay, I'm going to put those in an S3 bucket. How do I wire up an S3 bucket? It again, no problem. AWS Amplify through the CLI, I'll walk you through that, get it all wired up. And you're like, well, this is like a user login thing. I need auth. How do I get that all wired up? AWS Amplify through the CLI, it walks you through it. You get it all scaffolded out and set up in your app. Then you need like, I need like a GraphQL API, a little data storage, not file storage, data storage. How do I do that? Amplify gets you all going there. It doesn't care what you build. You could be building a Vue app or a Next app or a Flutter app or whatever. It doesn't care about that. It's helping you with the infrastructural bits. Where do I store data? Where do I store files? How do I do auth? And all the other stuff AWS can do. It's obviously AWS like powers a lot of the internet, really robust set of solutions over there. But for the good developer experience, you use Amplify to help you with that stuff. Now, I haven't even mentioned the admin UI yet. The admin UI is like literally a UI. Like imagine you're working on your site locally, but you could just go to a route on your own local site, like /admin or whatever you set it up to be. And that it's not just a CLI helping you navigate your site. Now it's a web page. It's like your secret backend of your site with a UI. And it helps you do all this stuff. Like what's happening with my auth? Not only how do I get set up with auth, but who are the users of my app? Now you have a UI for the users of your app. All that auth stuff is in a UI that you have access to, works locally and of course in production. It helps you scaffold out the data. So now you're like, you're not on your own writing GraphQL schema. Makes me nervous. You use a UI to build how you want the GraphQL to be structured, and then it scaffolds that out in your code. So cool. I just think this admin UI is just a super great idea for this kind of thing. It's really kind of the first of its kind, I think. So check it out. Thanks for the support. AWS Amplify.
All right. Joey M-H writes in. Support for CSS Grid is pretty great now, and our agency is using it in production. Our designers love it because it translates one-to-one to their designs. My question is, should we use Grid for every component we're building? Is it worth placing a full width headline on a grid, even though a regular centered text element does the job, or text block, regular centered block element does the job? On the other hand, having everything on the same grid is great for consistency. And on the other hand, it can create extra complexity, grid blowout, et cetera, defining all the grid placements and stuff. So what are your thoughts? Grid it, grid always, or grid on occasion?
I mean, that just seems, it seems weird to me that, you mean, like, should you dogmatically make sure that you're in absolutely 100% of all elements on your entire page are participating on the same grid? No. That's way too far. That's not how anybody wants you to do that. It was never suggested by anyone.
Yeah, and I think if you're like hard coding, again, that should be the tell, right? It, like, I even don't even use grid template areas that often because I feel like, oh, this is starting to get hard codey, you know, where that's sort of like where you describe with words the layout of the site, and you can do like columns and rows. Right. It's awesome. But I get a little, I'm not sure, because that's very, you start getting hard-coded, and then if somebody comes in and is like, I need a whole new thing, you're like, oh no, what do we, that doesn't just plop in there.
It's funny to me, though, because it kind of is like, it's an abstraction layer between, so it's, in some ways, it's the opposite of hard-coding, that you can say, like, I want it to be in the footer location, then you can update the middleman there and say, well, the footer location has now changed. It's now from column 2 to 4 instead of 3 to 6 or whatever.
Well, and I guess the fallback is it's just a block, like it's just 100% wide thingy if it's not, you know, specified, right? Like,
it just, that's true.
It's like, so that's,
or it gets nice. Auto-placed if it's on a grid.
What we've been doing at Paravel is we usually have a major layout on the, just like whatever sidebar columns or something like that. We have a major layout, and then in at the component level, when something's complex, we define a grid there. That could get tricky. We'd need subgrid if it, like, that grid has to match the parent grid, but usually it kind of doesn't. Usually it's like, I want 3 things here, 2 things here, you know? So that's kind of what we've been doing. I recently started doing containers with grid, like the kind of where you do like 1FR, 1FR, and then max content in the middle, or sorry, 1FR, max content, 1FR, I think is what it is. Or you can do like min max 1FR, or I'm trying to think, like 60 min max, like 30 rems and 60 rems or something, just to like give it a min and max width sort of that it behaves in. Again, I could describe it a lot better. I think I have a code pen I can link up here. But I've started doing that because I just kind of like, you know, every once in a while you do a container and then somebody's like, I want that to go full screen. And you're like, ah, or like somebody's like, oh, I want that to go hug the right side and or hug the left side.
So. I like this. So it looks largely like a centered column, but really the whole screen is a grid, so that in case you need to use that space, it's like available to you without doing something super weird like negative margins or whatever.
Yeah. So let me see if I can find my hug start and hug.
There was an Ethan article about this too. Like, you know, like why do a centered column with just like auto margins when you can kind of make like a 3 column grid and just use the middle column of it? That way those other grids are, I don't know if he said this exactly, but that was the implication, is that it's kind of like usable space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just sort of like it's space you could occupy, and you could actually go, like, I have it on like just 3, but you know, I could see like 5. So you have like kind of slightly larger elements and slightly smaller elements, and maybe they behave differently on mobile. Like the slightly larger ones go full width on mobile and the slightly smaller ones don't, you know, so.
Sure. And this gives you space for like, what if I need a little ad over there or a call out, or more likely, what if I just don't want it to be centered? Well, then just adjust that left or right column. There is no magic here. It's like you told it how big to be. That's pretty cool. So that's the opposite of what I just said. You're like make more stuff a grid than you might normally think of to make a grid. And I was kind of like, well, don't use too much grid. Don't use grid if you don't need it, you know?
This This took me a while to get into because I just was kind of like, you know, container. It's simply, it's just max width 60 CH and margin auto, you know, like don't overthink it, container. I totally agree. But then the second somebody's like, I want to do something weird, you're like, darn it. Like I was not wanting weird, you know, like, so, so I just was like, you know, maybe grids a little bit more expressive for that, you know? And so this is kind of our main.
So you're doing that thing that this is the thing that it's not like I'm anti it. It just like, it just gives me some kind of weird vibrations is that, so you have this container and it's got your three columns in it. You're saying maybe it could be five columns, whatever, but yours has three columns in it. Then you have to say just whatever is inside that container. So just star, like direct descendant star selector, please put that in the middle column. And and I've seen people do this with just like paragraph tags, image tags, block quotes. It'll just select anything and just slap it into that middle column. And that's mind screwy to me to just be like, ooh, really? Like that's not, you're not like gonna have a wrapper container on it, really? Because like there's little stuff. Like now they're grid items and not block elements. They behave a little differently. So like you don't get margin collapsing. So that's, you gotta make sure your brain is ready to deal with that. And then, like maybe that's better for your brain because margin collapsing is weird and complicated, but it is different behavior, you know?
Yeah, no, I wish you could like there was like grid flow start or grid columns.
Yeah. Flow like see all this stuff on chuck it in the middle parent. Column.
Yeah. Like this is where I want stuff to go by default, but the star works. Like,
unless I specifically say, please put it over there in that other column.
Right. So, and that's, I just like, you know, the Lord knows we don't need more grid systems. I feel like grid solve grid systems. So, but you know, I am like into finding a language that expresses like, or like, how do I express my grid or the design, you know? And so this is just a start. I don't think it's perfect. I think it's just an attempt to start it. So, so we'll see. I'm kind of, I don't know, poking around.
You know, okay, so here's another one for us for grid stuff, you know, just because Joey specifically asked, he's like, let's say you got like an H1 sitting there or whatever. It's just full width. It's display block. It's just sitting there. Like, should it be on a grid though too? Because it's just because it should or something. And that's where I'm like, I don't know. Is it display? Is it just hanging out there doing what it should? I wouldn't force it onto that grid just because you think you should. Sure. Right. And then I think that this topic of subgrid factors in here, because if you came to the other conclusion on your design team and said that everything should be on a grid, just so we have lots of control and it matches the designs and there's a good mental model for us, whatever, that the danger then is that you have to flatten everything, that you can't have this like semantic structure where you nest things like how you think they should be nested, because if they need to participate on the same grid, they can't be nested. They have to all be at the same level to participate on the grid. That's complicated by the fact that we have stuff like display contents now, which just like removes a div from it like looks like it's not nested anymore, which just complicates things a little bit. But more realistically, we have subgrid, which allows like sub elements to, it's not like they're, it's kind of like they're participating on the same grid, but not really. It's just that they say, please inherit your lines from the parent. So if there happens to be a row or column that happens to like intersect through that element, you can be like, I want access to that. I want to be able to line things up based on the parent's grid lines, not my own, which is kind of cool. So now that subgrid exists, I think maybe I don't think it's used enough yet. And it's not used enough because I don't even think it's in Chrome. And these days, like it or not, if it's not in Chrome, Chrome has such dominant share. Being that it's also IE and also Opera and all that, like, come on, that's big, you know, you kind of have to support it. But once subgrid drops there, I think we're going to see a lot more usage of it. It's just a big deal that you can get things participating on parent grid lines. You're going to see grids kind of starting to penetrate down into into semantic layouts a lot more. I absolutely promise.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it just doesn't look like it's there yet, or not in the next versions either. But yeah, I think, yeah, then it becomes super useful, because just when you have grids, but you have two grids, there's children next to each other that have to look the same. That's where it really matters.
I can't even say I have it like fully penetrated my mind yet, but there's definitely moments where I'm just like, oh, I wish I could do this. And then you're like, oh, you can with some grid. Oh my, thank the Lord. Oh, love of this feature.
Oh, an expressive grid system without the overhead of rambunctious class names. I do declare that is quite appetizing to my sensibilities.
I'm pleased with the outcome that this produces.
Well, I'm pleased as peaches with that sentiment.
Oh boy. Hey.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Netlify. High five, Netlify. Thanks for the support. You know, Cassidy Williams works over there now and has been on a tear this December, blogging all kinds of stuff you should know about Next.js and Netlify. I mean, other stuff too, but she just is a big Next.js fan, I think, and is showing off how well it works on Netlify. For one thing, you can like one-click install it. They have like a fancy plugin for that that just, you know, you just go whoop and it has a repo and is ready for you to work as a developer on. And then you know how easy it is to deploy on Netlify. You just like push to master or main and there it goes. I think Next is compelling for a whole bunch of reasons. One of the things is I was looking at, you know, like hot module reloading for React is like kind of okay, but never really worked super duper well. And then there's like some next generation, like React fast refresh or something they call it these days. It's just built right into Next. That's like highly appealing to me to know that I'm starting with a framework that has that going on. I really, really, really like being a developer and knowing that whatever file I change, a JavaScript file and a component, CSS file, or whatever, it's just instantly reflected in the browser as I work. I need it. And I love that it works super well in React and in Next, and it's just kind of built in there too. Now, one of the reasons you might reach for Next is that it has that client-side rendered thing going on, if you want to like use it for that, where it has that going on, client-side rendering, of course. But it has server-side rendering too. And if you want server-side rendering, that means you need to have a Node server behind it, which, you know, you can do on Netlify by virtue of it having lambdas that can run the Node code to do that. So that's pretty rad. And then it does, you know, Next does pre-building files too. So like no wonder it works on Netlify, right? Jamstack for days. So Next can do like all three of the things of rendering websites, client-side rendering, server-side rendering with a server behind it, and the pre-building, you know, pre-generating files too. Very clever technology in that way. You know, when I think of using it on a site like CodePen, I'm like, oh, we'd probably make use of all three of those in a way, you know, client-side render stuff so it feels fast and you're bouncing around the site really quick. But so many of the pages need SSR too and probably can't be pre-built because there's too many of them. But then some pages could be pre-built, like landing pages and stuff. So I just think that it's interesting to think of, like all those rendering methods that are really relevant for all websites. Next.js kind of handles all in one framework. Pretty cool. Thanks for the support, Netlify. What'd you buy recently, Dave? Have you forsaken your past?
We got some special news. If you've been following the Dave Goes Windows saga, I have purchased a brand new MacBook Pro. Ta-da sound. Guess who's back
again. What's the plan? Because you're using your Windows computer now. Are you planning to like kind of like abort ship and come back? Or are you just gonna have two computers around?
I think I'll have a gaming computer and a Mac work computer. I know like in the last episode we literally just talked about like computer setups and stuff like that. But you know, I've been fighting for 2 months, I didn't have an email client and a calendar. And like, as a businessman, I kind of need that stuff. Like, it was just a little ridiculous. Oh,
it wasn't a development problem. It was an email problem.
Well, that was like an software problem. That is like fixed as of like yesterday, the day we were recording this. And it's like, okay, cool. I didn't know that was coming, but great. I had a crappy 2 months and no one said sorry about it, but whatever. Like, they broke Gmail inside the mail app, but whatever. I that was frustrating. You know, the other day I got like a pop-up for like, hey man, you like in OneDrive? How about you like read OneDrive? And I just was like, you know, I don't want to do this, Windows. I'm very upset. I want that mail app. Could you just fix that instead of giving me a survey? And then like the kind of critical thing was like this week, literally this week, I was like, I want to do some open source. Like, I want to work on this like little web component thing. I pulled it down and I was like, I'm going to be a good citizen that has tests. I'm going to do the test-driven development, Chris. I'm going to be nice. Test man, testy yeah. boy.
I'm all about it.
And so, of course, I just start writing a test. I'm like, test, write the test, do, npm install. Okay, that sounds all good. And then I run the test and it's like, can't, whatever, connect to Puppeteer. And Puppeteer is like a... it's basically a driver for Chrome. Like, it controls Chrome like a Puppeteer. And I'm like three dependencies deep. It's web test runner and @web/test runner @web/test runner Chrome and then Puppeteer. And so I'm three, and it's actually Puppeteer core. That'll come into play later. which is Puppeteer core is Puppeteer without the actual Chrome install, or like without its own Chrome install. Look, like it uses, it stuffs a version of Chrome inside your node modules. Puppeteer core is like, I'll just assume you have Chrome on your system is sort of how Puppeteer core works.
Okay. So it would work locally, but less well in a Lambda or something, which definitely.
Yeah. And for tests, that's probably fine, I guess. So it just doesn't work. And so I'm like, dude, I swear I've had Puppeteer working on my system before. I've used it. I've played with it.
It's an error. Please use Playwright.
Yeah, basically. Right. But like, you know, but it, because it's three dependencies deep, I can't really just be like, oh, hello chaps. We're going to use a totally different thing now, you know, like take that Google, like who maintains at web or whatever. Like, I can't. That's not even in the cards, right? For like this open source project. So I'm just like, well, I can't even like contribute to this. I spend like 2 days, 3 days trying to get Puppeteer running on my local machine. I can on WSL for Windows, and I can actually like, I can install a local Chromium and I can run that in headless mode. But this uses head mode, which like spawns a browser. And I was like, well, maybe I can spawn the Windows Chrome and they can communicate. So I get it to spawn the Windows Chrome. It spawns the Windows Chrome, but it then there's like a WebSocket error, like it can't communicate with the Windows Chrome how it needs to. And I even like boiled all this down and I was like, okay, we're gonna do this just a hello world Puppeteer, like get it to open a browser and close a browser.
Sure.
And like, same thing, couldn't do it. But I was like, well, okay, I got it to like at least talk to my Chrome one. Maybe I can do that with Puppeteer core. But Puppeteer core, just through whatever, I guess, sort of bugs or whatever, I don't know. But it basically is like, I can't find Chrome. I can't find it. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe I can install Chrome. I try to install Chrome. And I tried to install Chrome and Ubuntu's like, dude, you don't have Snap, which is the new sort of way to install things on Ubuntu. It's not apt, it's Snap. So I'm like, okay, what's it?
Ubuntu.
Homebrew for Ubuntu. So I'm like, okay, how do I install Snap? Well, I have to like replace the kernel in my entire Ubuntu, like replace the kernel. And I just was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to like void my warranty and nuke my whole entire dev environment just to like get Snap running till I can install Chrome or what, you know, like it just was like frustrating me. And then even if I found another way to install Chrome straight from like the Debian package manager or whatever, I install that, like compile a whole version of Chrome, I have it. And then I try to like pass it to Puppeteer, whatever, Puppeteer Core. And Puppeteer Core, you can't pass variables. Like you can't pass environment variables to it. So it just doesn't work, Chris. And so I'm just like frustrated. And I'm like, this better? Well, that's it. It's like workarounds for workarounds. And I'm like talking to somebody at Microsoft and they're like, you know, oh, you guys install this VCXServe thing. And that's like a Windows X server, like X, like a, basically you can like view your Ubuntu installation window, like the GUI of your Ubuntu using this thing. And I'm like, and so he's like, go download this from SourceForge. And I'm just like, I'm not going to download some app from SourceForge just to like run a test. I just, this is not what I want to do. And I just was like, you know, I've lost 2 days on this. Like, I'm just going to buy a Mac. And so I bought a freaking Macintosh just to unblock myself, because not only does this open source project I want to contribute to use Puppeteer, but the I'm working on another little project with Paravel, and like we're probably going to leverage Puppeteer as well. And so it's like, man, like what?
I can like, feel you. I can feel the emotion in your voice about this. Kind of just like, I just need to unblock myself. Yeah,
I gotta unblock myself. I'm tired, and I'm. Like, I like Windows. I'm like using it right this minute, but I really like it. I really enjoy it. It is on a great trajectory, but I just like, I'm tired of workarounds for workarounds, and I had to unblock myself. It could be 10 months of the pandemic talking or whatever, but I'm just tired, you know? So I'm just going to.
I would do it all. I, you have way more tolerance for me. I have one little problem and I'll just open my money and just start throwing money at things. Just because I'm just in a position in my life where I can't handle the stress. Like I have more important things to do, you know, like I need to, whatever the solution is, if the solution is just like buy my way out of it, I absolutely will, you know, not that I'm not capable of measuring that and figuring out the balance between things, but yeah.
Yeah. So I just was like, I'll buy my way out of a problem, but then I'm kind of hit with a place, right? It's like, okay, these new Macintoshes just came out. The battery life is awesome. They last like 400 years. But it's on the ARM chip, which not everything kind of works on the ARM chip. So like, do I now, what do I do? You know? So I bet.
And did you look up Puppeteer before you bought it? Does Puppeteer run on it? Okay.
I got some bad news for you, Chris.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't work. But it, the workaround is you install everything through Rosetta, the x86, like Intel. Yeah. Side of things. And so like,
doesn't that come on it automatically?
It's on there. Yeah. Like, and so like, but you install Node through that. I'm working with my coworker Julian on this and he's like, Dr. J, help me out. But, I'm trying to like, so like you have to install, you know, Node on Intel, but you know, that's obviously like pretty, like it's a lot slower than Node on ARM. Cause you have to go through the whole like, transpilation process, but it's fast enough, you know what I mean? But like,
is that a temporary thing anyway? Because everybody's stoked about these machines.
Well, that's what I was thinking too, is like I bought the M1 just because I think in trajectories a lot. I think I realized this like as I was like blogging my feelings, you know, as I was installing all of God's Earth on this computer. I think about trajectories and, you know, this is a big one for Apple. Like they're not messing around. Like, and the battery life is way too good for them to be like, you know, we actually changed our mind. We're not going to do this. You know, like, I think they're just like, this is too good. So
the reports on it are astounding. People are there's no reports that are like, this is bad. The only negativity I've heard at all is stuff like Docker. I mean, I literally just can't do it until Docker is ready to go.
No, that's like a hard stop for people. And I think that's totally respectable, you know?
Well, also that they on purpose didn't release the 16. I don't want a 13. I want a 16. And the reason they didn't is it's almost surely that the 16 is going to have even some even more badass chip in it.
Totally. No, I mean, like it'll probably be the 2 or the M1S or the M1X, yeah, or the M1.
Right.
3, they'll skip a generation.
Super down, super down. I'm ready. As soon as a few more things drop, I'm on board.
I think you know, my coworker Julian Jones, he was saying, it feels like I paid $1,000 to be a beta tester, you know? And I was like, dang, that's cold. But that's kind of how it feels, you know, like you're a little bit. And like, again, like it's, I'm maybe trading one set of workarounds for another set of workarounds, but like I search for Puppeteer M1 problems when I hit them. And guess what? There's like people working on it and they've already forked it and there's already a workaround. You know, it's not like I have to discover and brute force the workaround. Like it's, there's workaround, like in not large workarounds, but like temporary workarounds, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. like until this software all comes together. And so I think it's probably on the order of months, not years, for some of these things to get solved. Docker's probably a ways out, but you know, so that's, again, thinking in trajectories, I'd rather buy the device that's on a good trajectory, you know, kind of going forward, whatever. I can do a hand-me-down situation if I need to. So,
well, congratulations. We'll see how that we'll check in over time. It didn't always used to be like this. I remember a day where, you know, it would be laughable to use a Mac because you're the one doing all the workarounds and crap, and things just work on Windows. And the times have just changed, at least for development stuff. They are just developer machines now, and they tend to work pretty well for that. I know I rarely have any trouble.
Yeah, well, and that's like it, is I just, like, I'm paying a tax, the aluminum tax, you know, the Apple tax, to like basically skirt some problems. And so it's cool. Yeah. I do think like
you used them, like, for a long time too. So you get to just like kind of come home to something you've already done, that you're not going to have to relearn where the system preferences are and stuff. You
know, no, it's not hard. I mean, like there's a few things, you know, I'm already like, but you know,
I want that blog post. I want the, cause I've been using it for so long and I've never done it. The ones that, like, I was gone for a while and came back. Here's what, you know, here's what sucks about your platform that you don't even know. Yeah. Do a mouth blog.
I got a mouth blog for you. Number one, let me touch the screen. Touching the screen is awesome. I know designers are like, man, don't touch my screen, but like, touch the screen. Just let me like swipe a web page. Let me like swipe an email off the screen. It's on Windows. It works on Windows. It's friggin' wonderful. Just have it. This is so dumb that they have the iPad. Just put the iPad on the thing. Anyway, I think it's just utterly ridiculous that they don't have that functionality. Anyway, you get really used to it. It's fine. It's dirty, but you know what? You get a microfiber. That problem solved. The OS, man, the look and feel of the OS, and coming from Windows.
Did you get Big Sur right away?
I got Big Sur right away, which is...
Well, it's so good.
That's a lot of action. I affectionately call it the cartoon OS because everything is a primary color and very big, bold colors. Everything's a super color,
border,
man.
Radius. Border radius all day. Oh, God.
If I could pay $100 to unlock a feature to remove the border radius on
apps, would you go all the way down to zero?
Maybe 2 pixels, like literally 0 or 2 pixels, because it is a joke. It's like every app's a little card. Hey, look at this card. I made a card. Your app is a card. It's Slack, but in a card. It's just ridiculous. So that would be the first change I would make, wholesale change. But yeah, the cartooniness, it's not for me. If you open up system preferences, none of those icons match. I know they like redid all those icons, and good job to everyone who worked on icons, but none of those icons match. It's a friggin' disaster zone. Windows' new settings is way better. even inside the thing is, you know, and then they have all the icons. Like you open up Finder and all the, like, it's just icons. It's like Gmail. It's just icons that mean nothing. Like icons with dropdowns. What do those mean? I don't know what those do. I've been gone for 5 years. Tell me what those do.
Those are a little worse in Big Sur. Like the top of a Finder window, it's a little messy.
No clue what that stuff does. Like, yeah. You know, like, it's just like, I don't know. It's like,
and some of
it's
them like are just grayed out and don't work. And yeah, not my favorite. That's the,
yeah. So that's a little bit frustrating. You know, I do think there's going to be a time where you're kind of on this sort of dual system thing, which again, that's sort of what like Windows is doing, is a dual system, a Linux thing and a, you know, and so that could be kind of frustrating in the long run, but you know, there's also some nice things. I mean, my wife's on Mac and iPhone and stuff like that. And I opened up Calendar and it's like we're already connected through iCloud or whatever. And we have like already have a family calendar. And I was just like, oh, honey, we can just use the family calendar. Like you don't have to even tell me when tennis is or whatever. Like, I'll just know. Like, that's great. Oh my like, God. We don't have to talk anymore, honey. This is wonderful.
See, being on the same system is so great like that. My wife went Android, so we don't, but I use Google Calendar, so that stuff is okay, but we do miss out on some stuff sometimes. Like I have to use Google Photos to get our photos synced, you know, because whatever, but it would be easier if I even went back to Apple Music instead of Spotify because it just tends to work a little better on my Apple stuff. And I got a HomePod at the office now that doesn't work super well with Spotify in my experience. So I'm just, the more I just dive into the aluminum paradise, Dave, I don't mind it.
Heading down. You're down the aluminum money train, dude. But no, it's, I think that is like a thing. Like I have AirPods cause I have an iPhone. And I like listen to 4,000 audiobooks a year or whatever. So like, and it's nice that the AirPods work with the Mac, right? But like, what I miss is already, I mean, like 6 hours into this experience, what I miss is my Surface earbuds, which pair to my Windows computer just great over Bluetooth, and they last all day. Not like the AirPods, which lasts like 1.5 hours and unpair every time you talk to somebody. So anyway, that's the pairing. I don't know. I said this in my Windows journey. Apple used to be the pinnacle of hardware, software, and design. I don't know that they are the pinnacle of all those things right now. And I think, though, the hardware story is maybe the most interesting story right now. And they've always usually lagged, you know, from whatever, X9000, Intel, or whatever. But like, the hardware story is very compelling with these new chips. Cause like, man, 6 hours straight on the computer, just like getting it tuned up and set up and stuff like that, lost 30% of my battery. Mm. Like, can you believe that?
Sweet.
Like, yeah. I mean, and that's like hardcore.
Plus when we're starting to be able to leave the house again, that'll be really useful.
Well, my friend Yan Wing, he was saying, you know, imagine going to a conference and you don't have to plug in. Like,
wow,
that's kind of revolutionary, right? Because have you ever been to a conference where it's like, where's the charger? It's like on stage. Okay, cool. I guess I'll go sit there or like leave my laptop on the stage like to charge or what, you know, like imagine conferences where you don't have to charge. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, battery life unlocks all kinds of doors. Like that is as Tesla well knows or whatever, that's a big frontier for cars and devices of all kinds and everything. Definitely doesn't take much of a science fiction mind to anticipate the day where, you know, computers are so fast that you're not just like waiting for little crap all the time. Everything you do just happens immediately and you don't have to worry about power. There's no wires or cords anywhere. Things last for incredibly long periods of time. That's the most obvious science fiction thing going forward. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and that's what it seems like Apple's almost achieved, you know, like is this near, like they've increased the battery and the performance. So according to their metrics or whatever, but like battery and performance and appears to be holding up. And so like, that's cool. Like that's a big technology leap. So that's like what even all my like Windows hardware reviewers are like, this is a big leap. So that sort of like inspired me or gave me confidence, I guess, to just bite into the M1, even if it's not perfect. So anyway, bought a new computer. Doesn't actually solve all my problems, but you know, here we go. Let's go, you know?
So. Yeah. I would have hoped that Puppeteer would have just ran just fine on Node and all that.
I was so like hoping for that story, like bing bong, boom. And then I was like, got the same error and I was like, god dang. but I knew like it was, it's like clearly a, cause it's looking for the Unix version of Chromium. So it's clearly like a if statement gone awry. Like it's just like very clearly like trying to find it. It's looking for the wrong thing. So anyway,
let's do this last one. Cause it's related to this from Felicia Betancourt. Hi, I'm a full stack developer who is about to delve into e-commerce for the first time. My client has a WordPress site, so naturally we're using WooCommerce. However, I believe that my question is relevant to any e-commerce platform. What strategy do you recommend for testing? I am practically sweating bullets just thinking about all the things that could go catastrophically wrong every time I update a plugin or whatever. I need to know that the store is working, but how best to do this? The more automatic process, the better. Well, we spent a lot of this show talking about Puppeteer. That's where my mind goes immediately. This is a integration test material here. You could write one that goes to your store. It puts something in a cart. It moves to the checkout process. It puts fake details into the checkout process. And just clicking those buttons, the right things happen. You know, like that's going to go so far. One Puppeteer test. Puppeteer jest probably because you'd have expectations.
Yeah. No, I mean, because the syntax is wild. It's like const page equals new page. Like, and then you give it a URL or whatever, and it's like page go to some URL, and then it's like page dot click jQuery selector button, and then it's like page dot fill form. The API is so just, and that's sort of the stuff we're using it for, is just like, can we
look at Cypress? Cypress is like, even cleaner,
yeah. And Cypress has like a GUI to like program the Puppeteer or whatever, so like just. Try that.
Yeah, you don't have to write, like, it's not, it's kind of a little thing, but it's all async await based Puppeteer, which is fine, you know, like that's, you need to write things sequentially, so cool. But the Cypress syntax, you don't have to do that, you know, you just like type it out and it just is a,
I think a with Cypress anyway. I just talked to them recently, but like they're doing cool stuff, but like Cypress, like, you know, you can download their app and not even you, somebody at the office can just be like, click through the website and say like, do this, it'll record those actions, and now you have a test for the rest of your life. Like, you didn't even have to do anything.
The absolute number one dream. I mean, Selenium had little crap like that back in the day, but like this, I think modernized and having it actually work and having it then express itself in code that somebody can debug that way if they need to, it's all a big deal. Puppeteer is just like a little closer to the metal in case you needed to do some special stuff. But I don't know. Cypress is probably the what to look at first. And you should only ever leave Cypress if you absolutely have to, because it's definitely the cleanest integration testing thing.
The thing I'm working on is like, you know, it's like a CRUD thing, but like, I need to know, can you create a thing? With data, can you see the thing? And then can you delete the thing? Or can you edit the thing and then can you delete the thing? Like, if I have that test set up for every line of code I write, man, I'm cooking with grease, man. That's great. Like, I know I didn't break anything. And so that's cool. Yeah. So
let's, I'm going to go one little step further for you, Felicia. Felicia. See, I don't know. So you put the pronunciation there and I still screwed it up. Okay, so it's a WordPress site, right? Which is like BYO deployment. So how are you going to deploy this thing? I don't know. There's a million ways to do it. I think it's, there's whatever. The way, almost it has to be done almost certainly at some point is some kind of thing needs to FTP up your files, because that's just how whatever PHP, that world works, you know, for the most part. So you have some hosting somewhere and you have those credentials, but maybe you abstract that in some way. You know, I use buddy.works for a lot of this stuff. You give it the credentials, you hook it up to a Git repo, and then it becomes a little bit more like Netlify or whatever. You just push files to the Git repo and they automatically get pushed live, ultimately through FTP, but you're not manually FTPing anything or something. But you could write that same thing any number of different ways. You could write it into a GitHub action, you know, that the deployment is kind of configured through that. However you configure, imagine it's something like Buddy or like DeployBot or Beanstalk or whatever. There's all kinds of these tools that do that. What you'd probably do is say that when I have a pull request against master, it automatically pushes to staging. So you're going to have to have some host that supports staging. A lot do. I use Flywheel. They have staging, you know. The idea is that your master branch is always staging. This is just one way to do it. There's other ways you could do it. Master could also be deployed if you want. You could have a staging branch and it could be required. A possibility is that master only takes PRs from staging and no other branches. It's like a protected branch. That could be a way to do it.
Yeah, you can set that up. Yeah.
But I'd maybe just have a staging branch or master is staging and then you have production, which goes to production or something. So you have some agreement with you and your team that these branches represent these things. And then you set up your deployment that does that. Let's say master is automatically staging. Any code that goes to master automatically goes to staging. And that there can be little actions that get triggered. Buddy can trigger the action. Any kind of CI thing can trigger the action. GitHub Actions can trigger the action. And that action says, run these tests. Run this Cypress test. Run anything you want. Run these unit tests. Run Prettier. Run whatever. In your case, maybe Cypress is the way to go because it's an easy integration test. You'll love it, I promise. You know, run the Cypress test against the staging URL. So now it's automated. As soon as the second you push, every single time people push 10 times a day to staging, it'll run 10 times a day. Totally automated. And it's going to run Cypress against that staging URL. So you're going to catch it. If your test fails, you're going to know it before it goes to production. And you can wire it up that says, if the test passed, you can't go to production. You know, that's the kind of DevOps wiring up. So that's, and this stuff is like, I don't mean to make it sound too easy. You're going to struggle with it and stuff. It's going to be weird, but that's why DevOps is a job these days. Cause that's the kind of crap they work on.
No, I think, you have the right problem, like you know your problem. And so, I think just getting a staging server is a big thing too. I mean, even that might take your sweat level down, like just knowing like, okay, I pushed it here and I did a little manual click through. The Cypress stuff is to eliminate the manual click through. Like you've tried to figure out ways to eliminate that. And I'm not even fully there yet. So I'm with you, but like, but man, wouldn't it be great to just like have a little insurance, just a little, take the sweat out, take the stress out, you know, and it just happens. It just kind of happens without you even asking it to. And so I assume all these like buddies and stuff, they all have like post commit kind of hooks or whatever, right? Yeah. Or post deploy web hook.
That's what they want you to use. As a business, that's what they're trying to push you towards. Not the most basic usage. I mean, and it's, you know, it's because if you get, that's how they get their hooks in you, you know, because that's all, those are all buttons and stuff that you click to get ready.
It's not configurable. They literally sell hooks.
Yeah, but they make it easy for you, so it's kind of worth it. But it's not configurable, you know. That's why there's always nerds being like, you know, like we use Pulumi a lot at, you've heard of Kubernetes too, right? Like, you know, like it's configuration for these things. It's like writing what you want to happen with your DevOps flow in code that you check into the repo. And then when you check in, that's executed. That says, I want this staging environment. It's on this type of computer with these type of resources and scales like this and has these hooks and yada, you know. So that way it's not some buttons that one person pressed, but then they quit because Netflix gave them more money than they got over at Yahoo or whatever, you know. And that person that clicked the buttons is gone now. You don't have to click any buttons. It's code.
Yeah.
That's nice, but that's a level up. That's extra nerdy. And the companies that provide the buttons, I'm all about it because I need buttons.
Well, and you know, you can do it yourself, but you know, for me, it's like, can I solve a problem with a button, right? Like if I can do that, that's great for right now, you know, like then I can do the full nerd stuff later, but yeah, hopefully yeah, that gotta, helps.
Yeah. You definitely step up to the levels, you know, do the simplest thing first, like buy a Mac,
like buy a Mac to write an open source test. Why not? It's only a few thousand-ish dollars, but the new Macs are cheap too. I should say they're a lot more affordable than Macintoshes used to be.
Is that right? Anyway. I didn't know that. Anyway,
start at one, but it's confused. More Mac talk. We're now in Apple Podcasts. Sorry, everybody. But the like 8 gigabytes, you know, like they offer RAM 8 and 16, and you're like, no way 8 works, right? Like every computer I bought with 8, just like the sides of the computer fall off. It's actually kind of works. Like it's just like how your iPad only has like 4 gigs. It's like 8's kind of enough, you know. 16's like turbocharged. So I only have 8. It seems to be working just fine. Like maybe a stutter. That's here cool. And there.
How responsible of you. I find it impossible not to just make all the out. Selects go
it's
to
more
the bottom
a time there. Thing. Yeah, no, I'm into the
well, they had one available, you could have it right then. Yeah.
Oh yeah, walked into Best Buy and got a computer, so that was easy. So,
oh, Best Buy's got these things already. I assume they get them later than the Apple stores.
Yeah, they usually do, but I think you know there's supplier agreements and all that. Anyway, this show's gone on, but anyway, I'm back on Windows Mac. If you have utility app suggestions, I will take them because that's sort of what I'm most excited about this whole thing. Switch
utility apps, good, really? Oh
good third party apps. That's what I'm interested in. So anyway,
you gotta get SetApp like today. Then, like, I'm not a shill for them, but I feel like SetApp has all the good stuff in it.
All my utilities for $5 a month. Okay, yeah. Well, maybe. All right. Okay, well, cool. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher. Search for Star her favorite app. That's what people find out about this show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Tens of tweets a month. Head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you. Maybe like this company. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.
Macintosh now.